Hello everyone, this is Jason from Kips. I would like to do a second, I'm doing another installment of Ghostly History of the 518. First I'd like to say I hope everyone's being okay with this coronavirus 19 going on. I hope you guys are all following procedures and cautionary procedures and being safe out there. We're all going to get through it. We're all going to be fine. So, again, my name is Jason, and this is the second episode. And I'd like to talk about one of a case we had a couple of years ago. And it involved a family in Catskill, New York. Hence, it's Ghostly History of the 518. We don't give names, we don't give exact locations, just, it's in our paperwork, so, you know, I'm not gonna be saying any names, any exact locations of issue, but I want to give you a little history of the thing that we found with the case. So, we got called up from this family in Catskill, and we set up an interview and we went and we found out what was happening. They said they were hearing noises, growls, seeing a man, hearing a woman, having things moved on them, getting touched, you know, all the stuff that poltergeist-like activity associated with spirits. So we talked to them and we found out all the information from them. We set up a preliminary investigation to find out what we could find out. So we did a preliminary investigation and we came back and we listened to our evidence to see what we had gotten. Well, once we got in our evidence, we started looking up some of the history. And we found out through the history that we got some of our evidence matched up with some of the history that we got. So the history is a little bit about, the history goes back to the 1700s, early 1700s. Actually, it goes back as far as the early 1700s, but the situation happened in the late 1700s, around 1775-ish. But it goes back to the origin goes back to about 1705. So there was this general back in 1705. It talks about the history of the forming of Greene County and where towns started, how they started, where they got their names. So Greene County was starting to be formed by two counties. Fort Orange, which is Albany County area, and down in Ulster County. By those two counties were put together, the borderline pretty much was Greene County. And you had a town called that was forming. You had Coxsackie up near Fort Orange, near Albany. A family called the Salisburys lived in Coxsackie, and then they bought some land further south, and there was a General Salisbury in 1705. He was a general from the French and Indian War. The house was built in 1731. Right in Leeds, New York, which is in the town of Catskill. Back in the, well, there was time went by and his grandson, William Salisbury, moved into that house. And there's a story of a murder that had happened in that house involving William Salisbury. The true story is as follows, and I'm reading this straight from the Beers book of History of Greene County. The true story is as follows. Salisbury had a bound girl named Anna Dorothea Swartz, who persisted in visiting at a house of a family of bad reputation. And in those days, the master of a bound boy or girl was given absolute control over them and was responsible for their conduct. This family lived at the foot or second turn of what is now known as Films Hill, on lands of Newkirk, now Schaefer's, and on this occasion refused to return with her master, Mr. Salisbury. Well, once she refused to returned with Mr. Salisbury to the house, he tied one end of the rope around the girl's waist and the other to his own. And at that time, it was a foolish but not necessarily wicked act. And what he did is he started it was a foolish but not necessarily wicked act, for he was in much danger as she. And nearly shared her demise, her fate. As the horse is valued at 3 pounds in the indictment, it was very likely an old one. The horse, however, became frightened. Salisbury was dragged from his back, and the girl was killed. Salisbury immediately gave himself up and was indicted for murder, but the case never came to trial. His lawyer was James Barker of Carrow. Opposite the entrance to the Newkirk farm, before the state road was built, was a large boulder known as Spook Rock, and here in where is where the girl is supposed to have met death. And here at midnight, on the anniversaries of her death, a huge gray horse with rider and girl appeared to superstitious townsfolk. Now, there have been people that met with Mrs. Salisbury and to try to figure out if that. So what happened is, after he indicted himself, he was brought to court. The court ordered him. They didn't find him guilty. Or he was found guilty, but he wasn't punished for murder. What he was told he had to do was wear a noose around his neck. As the story goes, he would have to wear a noose constantly, 24/7, 365 days a year, around his neck. And it had to be tight. And on the anniversary of Dorothea's death, he would have to report to the judge in the town of Catskill, village Catskill, town of Catskill, every year until his death to make sure that he was wearing the noose and that it was still tight. As story goes, Mr. Salisbury lived to be the age of 99. His whole life, he pretty much became a hermit after that death. The kids would make fun of him. They would go past his house, make fun of him. There's rumors, there's stories of what initially happened is why Mr. Salisbury came so furious. There's stories of him supposedly having an affair with Dorothea, that they were in love, and he was going to, Mr. Salisbury was going to leave his wife for Dorothea, and his wife found out. So that's why Dorothea
didn't say the magic word.
Ran away because she didn't want to confront with Mr. Salisbury's wife. There are stories that while Mr. Salisbury was telling his wife, Dorothea overheard it, that he was telling his wife that, you know, he was in love with Dorothea and he wanted to be with her and break the marriage between him and his wife. So that's why Dorothea ran away. There were stories that Dorothea was a party girl. She would sneak out, go into this house of bad reputation. There were stories about Dorothea being in love with another person, and she would escape to go see this person of another family. There were rumors and things that I haven't found concrete that her debt, because what had happened is Mr. Salisbury had paid Dorothea's family to come to the States, and to pay back Salisbury's, she was bound to them for this debt, and she had to be their servant or bound person for them for a numerous amount of years to pay back the debt, because Mr. Salisbury had paid for her family to come over to the States. So there's another story that her debt was paid, the family debt was paid, so she tried to escape, and Mr. Salisbury found out about that. So there's no really defined actual answer with all logical reasoning behind it. So I'm going to read you another fairy tale, if I can find it. Or not fairy tale, but story that was found, and it's going to sound like pretty much the same thing. So it's called Tie Noose. Tie Noose is a true ghost story from New York about a young servant girl who was killed by a man, a violent man. This legend is sometimes called the Ghost from Leeds or the Ghost with Flaming Fingers. It is based on a number of folklore sources and a version that was collected in the Myths and Legends of Our Land by Charles Skinner. Now, I know I'm reading these things to you, but these are, like I said, ghostly history of the 518. Many years ago, there was a young Scottish girl. Now, the origin of this, of Dorothea, we really don't know. Some history they saw said it was a Scottish girl. Some said she was a German girl. So we don't really know the exact origin of her. It wasn't stated in the Beers history book of Greene County. So this part we found out that they say in this tale, version of the story, they said she was a Scottish girl. So, it says, many years ago, there was a young Scottish girl named Anna Dorothea Swartz who traveled to the United States to seek her fortune. She came to work as a servant in a large stone house near the town of Catskill in New York State. The man who owned the house was a mean-tempered and violent individual called William Salisbury. He had paid for her ticket to come to America, and as soon as she began working for him, she realized what kind of a man he was. He treated her like a slave and told her she wouldn't be paid until she had worked off the cost of her ticket. She was trapped. Salisbury was vicious and brutal, taking pleasure in the suffering of others. He frequently lost his temper at Anna and looked for any reason to beat her or abuse her. On one occasion, he caught her passing by a closed door and accused her of eavesdropping on conversation between him and his wife. Despite the young girl's protests, he took her outside and whipped her until her entire body was covered in welts and bruises. Salisbury was so cruel to Anna that she couldn't stand it anymore, and one day she decided to run away. When Mr. Salisbury found out she was missing, his anger knew no bounds. Cursing and swearing, he jumped on his horse and chased her across the countryside. The fierce man relentlessly pursued poor Anna and scoured the woods until he eventually found her desperately fleeing through the woods. Now, if you look at the Beers book, she was at a house of bad reputation, which was what they say was 4 rods from the Salisbury house, which is approximately, from what I can remember doing the research, is approximately 6 miles. Which, as the crow flies, because rods were measured by as the crow flies, would lead to around the area of Hoppenose and Catskill. So, the furious man relentlessly pursued poor Anna and scoured the woods until he eventually found her desperately fleeing through the trees. When Salisbury caught her, he took a cord and tied her hands to the tail of his horse. Now, see, this story says he tied her hands to the tail of his horse, where in the Beers book, it said that he had tied a rope around her waist, and then he tied the other end of the rope around his waist. Then he dragged her all the way back to his house. By the time they reached the home, she was dead. Her frail body had been dashed into two pieces on the rocks and stones that covered the country road. All that was left of her was tattered, bloody mess. Now, here's the interesting part. This is where it matches up a little bit with the history books. Salisbury was arrested and tried for murder. In court, he claimed that he hadn't meant to harm the girl at all. And said he was only trying to teach her a lesson. According to the story, he told, which is in the Beers History Book of Greene County, New York, his horse had become frightened and reared up, throwing him off. Then the horse bolted and dragged the young girl to her death. He tried to explain it all away as a tragic accident. In the end, the jury did not believe his story, and Salisbury was given death penalty. He was sentenced to be hanged by the neck for the crime of the murder. However, Salisbury was a rich man, and money can buy many things. In this case, he used his money to bribe the judge. That's because his great-grandfather was a general during the French and Indian War. So the name became very popular. So he had a lot of money at that time. In this case, he used his money to bribe the judge. His sentence was suspended until his 99 years of age. If he actually lived that long, in the meantime, he was ordered to wear a hangman's noose around his neck to remind him of his crime. He was ordered to report to the judge at Catskill once a year to make sure he was keeping the noose tied around his neck. After the trial, he was a changed man. Wherever he went, people would see the hangman's noose and they stared and pointed at him, knowing he was a murderer. He couldn't explain the shame. He couldn't escape the shame. Salisbury became an outcast and nobody in town would associate with him. Soon afterwards, rumors began to circulate that the ghost of the young girl had been seen in the area. Sometimes she would be spotted sitting on a stone wall at the bottom of his garden, with hellish flames rising from her fingertips at the sound of an unearthly laughter coming from her lips. At other times, the ghost of the poor murder girl was spotted, tied to a ghastly horse that dashed past the man's window every night. Those who saw her described her as a bloody skeleton with tattered garments and streaming hair flapping in the wind. The clatter of hooves on the rocks and the girl's terrified shrieks echoed outside Salisbury's window the whole night long. People would walk miles to avoid passing Salisbury House, not wanting to hear the horrible screams of the dead. As years went by, Salisbury became a recluse, never speaking to anyone and spending his time alone in his house. They say the ghost of the murdered girl tormented him every night, eventually driving him insane. One day, his dead body was found hanging from the ceiling of his house. So, that goes in more detail of what had happened. So, we were looking up in all this information, and we were connecting, trying to come up with the whole story of all the things evidence we found. And we found out that this case happened to be involved with this time period and in this incident. And we found out that, so we did another investigation, and we used this history. And what we found out is that Mr. Salisbury had been bounded with Anna, even after death, and she wanted to escape it. Now, no one has ever done this, or in Greene County, no one's never really investigated this. They always had the folklore like everybody has. No one's investigated this stuff. And so what we did is we connected it to, and we came up what we were going to do between the first and second investigation. So we went to do a third investigation, and we had taken care of the situation. We did what we had to do. We did, for the client. We gave the client the information. We told them what we found. We told the person, the client, what we found. What our plan was to help her solve and reconcile her issues in her house. So we did that. We set up another investigation, and we proceeded to help her. And wound out actually helping. That was a very, very, very interesting case. To deal with an actual bound spirits to one another. It was, it's definitely interesting. So we said we did our third investigation. We rectified the issue, and we helped the client and their family to get on a little bit better. Now, I am looking for a I'm looking through my notes, trying to tell you more about this. Alright. We found out, we went looking for Anna's shorts. And the reason is that we really don't know exactly. One said she was Scottish. We found another thing, possibly Anna Schwartz with a death certificate being in Germany. And that's the closest spelling that we had according to the Beers book. The one that we read, what the Scottish sent, Schwartz was had a S at the end instead of a Z. So we kind of used both of them. But the one that was closest to the spelling was saying she was from Germany. Female of 22, which the states about that was about the girl of Anna Schwartz. Her birth date was 1709, which happened around that time. Her death date was 3rd of March in 1731, which is around the time that William Salisbury owned the house of his grandfather. So we, with the name, gender, the age, the birthday, and the date, death date, all added up to our case. This says her birthplace was in Germany. Now, we don't really know how accurate that is. And her burial date was on 5th of March, 1731. That could coincide with the death date. Gave her father the name of Johnson Thomas Schwartz and her mother, Anna Carathena. Salisbury Manor. This is a bluestone mansion was built by William Salisbury in 1730. He was a saltwood fisherman and stern man. This is more history that we found out from a history book of another history book in Greene County. Of Greene County. He repeatedly warned Anna Schwartz. Oh, wait. He had a saltwood Christian. He was a saltwood Christian and stern man. He went too far in punishing one of his servant girls. He repeatedly warned Anna Schwartz that he would not stand for her late night merrymaking. One night, he went to a dance held at a neighboring farmhouse and demanded that Anna accompany him home. To humiliate her further, the heartless man tied his servant to a rope attached to a second horse he had brought with him. His servant walked behind the animal for several miles until something spooked the horses. Salisbury was thrown from his horse, but Anna's horse galloped away, dragging her behind. So all these stories, there's different versions of them. The poor girl died a horrible death, and Salisbury was sentenced to hang for her murder. However, because of his high standing in the community, his sentence was delayed until he reached the age of 99. In the meantime, he was ordered to wear a noose around his neck to remind him of the sentence. Salisbury wrapped the noose in fine red silk and facetiously carried out the decree. He died in 1801 at the age of 87. For many years, the ghost of a gray horse dragging something behind it was seen galloping the road on the road to Salisbury Manor. After Salisbury died, his ghost joined the gray stallion to ride forever along the haunted road. And Salisbury Manor is at the junction of Highway 23B and 5 Miles Road in Greene County. So that's another story version of it. And that was taken from around Greene County and the Catskills. There's pictures of Salisbury House. another version of the story that was called Dragged to Death. Well, little we know of Anna Dorothea Schwartz came from an 18th century bill of indictment, which Richardson discovered in the library of Greene County Historical Society in Coxsackie, New York. Sometime before 1755, a wealthy Catskill landowner, William Salisbury, acquired Schwartz as a servant. That year, he tied her to a horse, and she was subsequently dragged to death. But she did not rest in peace. In 1824, Colonel William Lee Stone, editor of New York City newspaper, called the commercial advisor, visited the newly opened Catskill Mountain House Resort, and heard of hauntings near the town of Leeds that he later related to his newspaper. Quoting, "Sometimes sighs and lamentations were heard in the air, like the plaintiveness of slow whistling wind. A white horse of gigantic size with fiery eyeballs and distended nostrils was often seen to run past the fatal spot with a fleetness of wind, dragging a female behind with tattered garment and streaming hair, screaming for help. At other times, the horse was appeared to drag a hideous skeleton clattering after him, half enveloped in a winding sheet." Although the case against Salisbury was dismissed, it appears the story serves as a kind of public judgment against him, to indict guilt and to frighten and admonish the community that he had allowed the injustice. Richardson writes, "But this is also a case in which local political and social forces shaped the story's telling and central figure, who at times is cast as a Scottish or German servant, or slave of mixed African and American Indian ancestry." So that's where we were getting, you know, we didn't know if she was actually a German servant or a Scottish servant. This was the first time we heard of her being a slave of mixed African and American Indian ancestry. As in 1862, the novel The Sutherlands, written by on the verge of Civil War, the novel employs the ghost of Leeds in an anti-slavery agenda, one that seems directed against Northern complacency, according to Richardson. A lot of the Salisbury land and this area for the town of Catskill was in the Love Ridge Patent of Greene County. There was also another thing we found. That was haunted southern tier. Judith Richardson's Possessions, The History and Uses of Hauntings in the Hudson Valley, 2003, finds that ghostly women in black, gray, and white tend to comment on the history and nature of their communities. One intriguing ghost has stayed in the public eye, the ghost of a female being dragged behind a ghostly horse, reported variously seen near Spook Rock and Spooky Hollow on the outskirts, is now called the Village of Leeds. Over time, legends have described this ghost as white, black, Scottish, German, Spanish, and Indian. Her story originated from the 18th century murder of Anna Dorothea Schwartz, a servant who worked for the house of a rich man named William Salisbury. A document composed in 1762 explains that Salisbury did beat and force and compel that said horse so swiftly to run that the horse aforesaid Anna Dorothea Schwartz then and there instantly dies. Was Anna
Dorothea Schwartz a slave or an indentured servant? Did Salisbury kill her in this cruel way because she rebelled? Baroque rules are resistant romantic advances. Richardson explains that the indictment was dismissed, possibly because the court found Salisbury to have acted within his rights as a master. Although the court did not hold Salisbury responsible, ghost stories kept this gruesome murder on people's minds. In 1824, the editor of New York City newspaper told the story of a gigantic white horse dragging a female behind with tattered garment and streaming hair, screaming for help. Later, the ghost takes other forms. Richardson makes the point that the ghost is both vestige and novelty, positive and negative, powerful and powerless, a possessing force that decrees upon the town and through history, and something passive that is possessed. Although we will never know exactly what happened to the young servant or the slave from Leeds, we know that the ghost refers to be silent. The ghost refuses to be silent. In various political and social contexts, she had made her presence known for almost 250 years. Like the ghost of Anna Dorothea Schwartz, the White Lady of Devil's Elbow has a connection to a large ago tragedy. White Lady Legends. 1830-1990 helps to. So it kind of ends there and it goes into another story. And that's from Possessions, The History and Uses of Haunting in the Hudson Valley. It was that book is from. It's by Judith Richardson. So, during the time of Civil War, this story in this area was used as an anti-slavery context. So, Anna was used in that kind of aspect. There's some that say Anna Dorothea wasn't real, that she was just used as a figure person to show discrimination. And it was connected to questions of race and ethnicity. And there's documentation and stories and rumors saying that how, you know, certain families who were related to the Salisburys tried to hide this and just use their, oh, she wasn't real. You know, it's just used as a, idea instead of an image to represent something else.
So it's the story is very interesting, and I feel that we had, as a group, when we found all this out, like I said earlier, I think we helped the client, and I think we may have broken the bond between William Salisbury and Anna. We haven't heard anything and since we did it about them. Nothing else happened after we did. We got confirmations from the client that a female spirit did visit the client and say thank you, which we found very interesting. So I think in all, when we did our investigation, we were the third one trying to help the spirits. We broke that bond, and the female spirit was able to pass on. So I think we were, by what we found and our evidence, we were right on what we did. But yeah, that was one of the first major ones we had, major cases that we had here in the 518. If you guys got any questions, feel free about this case. Feel free to ask us. We're on Facebook. Okay, I think I've told you before. We're on Facebook, Kirkman Investigations, the Paranormal Society. We have an email, KirkmanInvestigations@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram and on Twitter also. Again, my name is Jason Kirkman. I'm a co-founder, case manager, lead investigator, you name it, I do it, of KIPS, of our group. And feel free to hit us up if you have any questions about this case on a more private note. And like, you guys all stay safe. Stay safe with this coronavirus. Keep, like I said before, follow, you know, precautionary, and be safe out there. Alright? Hope you guys are all having a good day. And talk to you later. Bye.